from the great halls of their house, there are assembled three who hope to one day be the world's greatest driving heroes. Created from the cosmic legends of the universe comes our team captain, the Vision, Bill Fisher, and their soon-to-be Wonder Woman, Vicky Fisher, and our Captain Marvel and head flight trainee, Jennifer Scripchunk. Their mission, to fight injustice, share what is right and wrong, to get you out of your house and come out racing with them and serve all mankind. They are the Garage Heroes in Training Team.
Welcome to the Garage Heroes in Training Podcast. I'm going to be the host for this episode. My name is Bill. Who else is hosting?
I'm Vicky.
Miss Vicky. Mm-hmm. We have a guest.
Yes, we do.
We might even have another guest, depending on how things go. But we have at least one guest today. He is series leader for NASA Northeast of the Spec 3 Racing Series. He is apparently pulling triple time by sometimes doing this for Spec E30 and sometimes for Spec E46, which we have to talk about a little bit about because I have one of those. And welcome to the podcast, Taylor Johnson.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Taylor, you'd be amazed at how many people wave, and we have an audio podcast. It's fantastic. You're not the
first. You see me.
It's not the first. It's okay. I'm from Jersey. I'm used to a different wave. That's a whole different story. But anyway. So, sir, how did you – let's go a little bit about you first before we get too much into the Spec 3. How did you get started?
Well, a certain number of years ago, I was born. And
then, were you young at the time, or
I was exceedingly young at the time. Actually, rumor has it I was the youngest person alive
at that moment.
Second, yes,
yeah, okay,
yes. So since then, years have elapsed, and you know, the sun has been revolved around by the earth, and I wanted to go racing, and I looked at the classes in the Mid-Atlantic region where I was at the time with NASA, and I picked Spec 3. And we could talk about why in more detail.
We will.
But yes. But I joined the class and I saw that it wasn't doing as well as it should have been doing, given how great it was. So then I asked the series leader, hey, now that I'm going to be racing this next year, can I also try to help you with marketing? And then I started doing that, which we can talk about more detail. And now, I guess, 3 years later, we're here and Spec 3 is interesting enough to talk about on your podcast and interesting enough to get a lot of attention across the US. And I've done some fairly interesting and reasonably successful driving in the class as well. So it's been a fun journey. I'm excited to talk about it a little bit more.
Awesome. This is where you read the document, Miss Vicky.
I'm sorry. Oh, my bad. So how did you get into it? I mean, with the racing, the racing aspect of it.
Yeah, so this one, you may have to stop me. I may talk too long on this one.
We have lots of tape in the computer. It's fine.
It's fine.
Cool. So, I went to a school called James Madison University. It's in Harrisonburg, Virginia. It's over in the mountains. And people listening, if they like college football, they were one of the big stories this year. So maybe you may know who it is. Mm-hmm. But I went there and joined a club called Madison Motorsports. And the focus of that club was not to be a car club, but to be a driver's club. And I'm going to give a shout out to my friend Jake. He showed up. He was a graduate at the time, but he came back and he did a speech during the kind of informational, like get to know each other kind of meeting for Madison Motorsports. And he said, stuff you're going to do here is cool. Car shows are cool, but come to the track. Come to a NASA Mid-Atlantic event specifically. And it turns out that Madison Motorsports has been feeding NASA Mid-Atlantic workers, drivers, racers since its inception in the early 2000s. So the first flaggers for NASA Virginia at the time were NASA Motorsports students. So it's kind of an extension of the club every time you showed up to the track. So of course I went. I went to Virginia International Raceway as a freshman, slept in a tent on the ground, was woken up by two Porsche 911s being started up right next to
me. Wow. Not a bad way to wake up, though.
Not a bad way.
Yeah. And you know, since then, I was hooked on going to the track. So NASA Mid-Atlantic has a really great worker program. So I worked for them doing grid for a couple years, and then I moved to timing and scoring, and then I moved to the tech shed, and then registration, and then eventually was even sometimes the chief of registration for events like Hyperfest and things like that. And eventually kind of became everything. And then, that's great, but obviously I like going to the track because I wanted to race. So I picked up an E30 and I wanted to build it into a race car. And it defeated me. I was a recent grad at the time. So I've been working for NASA for 4 years. And I just graduated high school, or not high school, college. And I was in Northern Virginia trying to build a spec E30 in my little tiny garage. And it was a basket case. It defeated me. It took all my money. And that was a me problem, not an E30 problem. It's just, it was too far gone for me to try to build. So I gave up on that. Got a GTI, brand new. First new car, only new car I've ever had, and started doing HPDE in it instead with, 500 miles. So my friend Jake, who
Oh,
was the person,
is
go
this
ahead.
Jake from State Farm or
Oh,
no?
stop. I knew he was going there.
I've never seen him in khakis, nor have I seen him in a red shirt. So I
Okay.
don't think it's Jake from State
Okay.
Farm.
All right. Well, you never know.
But I'll ask him. I would love to be introduced to Patrick Mahomes. But
Okay.
anyway, so he was the person that told me to come to the track. And then he was also my first instructor in the GTI. So I worked through HPDE in that GTI. I got to HPDE 2 after, about half a season. And I started asking, what race car really should I do? And I could go on and on about the selection process, but basically I looked around and I said, what's the most consistent field? Who are the nicest people? What's the most affordable vehicle long term to get cheapest to get into? And I looked around and E36 kept coming up. E36, E36, E36. So
Wouldn't
I looked
say it's
at,
the cheapest.
yeah, you can make it very expensive too. So that's kind of the wrong direction I took at first was I looked at German Touring Series, which is awesome. Lots of people have a lot of fun there. And my friend Jake was racing in it and in it at the time. And I started to talk to him about the costs of it, and his spreadsheet made me want to throw up when I looked at it, just on how much he'd been spending. And his car, at that time they were starting to do, people were talking about putting sequentials in their cars and stuff, and it wasn't there, right, for a recent grad. And so he said, well, if you do spec three, they're a lot cheaper than these, cars with wings and high horsepower and all that stuff. And also, I know of a good one. It's actually the one that I had in college 10 years ago. This is Jake speaking. And another Spec 3 driver has it, and it's his daily driver. So I started pestering him. Simon Kim started pestering him. Sell me your car, sell me your car, sell me your car. So eventually, after probably 6 to 9 months of pestering him to sell it to me, because I knew it was the perfect donor, I did end up getting him to sell it. It was December of 2018. So I bought that and I started building it, had all winter, put a roll bar in it and all those things. And then I just did the typical build as you go HPDE. I did HPDE 2, HPDE 3 in 2019 with that car. And then COVID happened and progress slowed, but I did get to support a small business at the time and get the cage built in 2020 in that car. And then finished up HPDE 3 when, the season resumed. I think it was probably like August or something before we had another event. And then competition school in March of 2021. And then it's just been iterative progress from there. I got
Nice.
my instructor certification somewhere along the way. Pace car, been in flag stand. So kind of been everywhere now. And it did lead me to being able to jump in as a series leader in the Northeast when I moved to Pittsburgh. And now I'm dabbling in all that stuff, the more administrative side of racing. So,
So
yeah.
where do you see yourself going? Where do you see yourself in 10 years with this?
Well, I think every person that's my age that is racing would tell you that they'd love to see themselves in a pro seat or something more serious. Obviously, I don't think that's going to happen for me. I wouldn't be, upset if it did. In 10 years, I hope that I'm still racing. I hope that Spec 3 continues at this hockey stick growth rate. And, if the math adds up in 10 years, that would mean that we would have 10 million Spec 3s and you know, a large percentage of the U.S. population would be racing them. I don't think that's going to happen. So I don't know what car I'll be racing in 10 years. Hopefully, Spec 3, maybe something else. And hopefully still with NASA. You know, 10 years mm-hmm. is a long time. But that's actually kind of a terrible answer when I think about it, because it doesn't really reflect any kind of growth. I have these three pieces of paper taped to my wall here that have some goals, and I don't usually share them with anybody. I'm not going to share all of them. But a lot of them have to do with numbers of cars in Spec 3, performance within my region and national championships, and then also my performance as a series leader. So
mm-hmm. nice.
I have a day job, you know.
Yeah.
That's my focus. I don't do anything racing related. This is all a hobby. So just maintaining mm-hmm. that would be great. But we'll see.
That's awesome.
So when you're on the track, I always am very interested in racing philosophies or things that people tell themselves or you know, words of wisdom that are kind of your motto or mantra that you pass on to other racers. Do you have something like that?
Yeah. So every time I'm on grid, I sit there and my heart starts to race. And I even get this anxious when I'm doing iRacing, which mm-hmm. is a little embarrassing. But I get very nervous. I get imposter syndrome even 3 years into racing, you know, 5-6 years of being on track. I still feel like maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I don't have the drive. Do I have the courage to, you know, send it into that gap that I see? But I always mm-hmm. just say, you can do this. I just mm-hmm. say it a few times to myself, calm myself down. And then sometimes I'll say smooth is fast, and then I'll say slow is fast. Those mm-hmm. are both very cliche, and the second one doesn't make any sense. But mm-hmm. sometimes it's a good reminder, because I used to have a really bad habit of sawing at the wheel and mm-hmm. driving the car. And then after that, I don't think anything. You know, I'm just focused on car in front of me. How do I get past them? Mm-hmm. And then how do I not wreck?
You when you're on the track, you have to be so in the moment
mm-hmm.
and slightly ahead of yourself. Yeah. You know,
I will say the one thing that I don't say explicitly to myself, but is always my goal. And, you know, I don't have to say winning's the goal. I don't have to say running a new PB. Those are obvious, right? If you're not, mm-hmm. in my opinion, if that's not your goal every time, then I don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But some people do enjoy just flapping. But for me, the biggest thing, and the biggest thing I tell all the people that race in the Northeast with me, is don't ruin anyone else's race, right? Like you will have a great time if your goal is to not ruin the race for anybody else, because even if you do terribly, that's just on you and you don't have to worry about it. But I don't mm-hmm. care if I have a great battle and I'm 1, 2, and 3, you know, duking it out for the podiums, and then I tap somebody and spin them, or I mess up when, you know, two Honda Challenge cars or something are coming through and I mess up their race just because I'm too caught up in mine. There's a time and place for that, but mm-hmm. it's always nice knowing you did your best. And I really, really love, and I got this, I think in November, some people came up to me and they said, hey, you know, thanks for letting me by when you did. That was awesome. Saved my race. That's the kind of stuff that I look mm-hmm. for. And I tell myself a lot out there.
Well, we've always, you know, always said it takes a group to get around the track, mm-hmm. you know, not just yourself. You have to, when you're all out there, it's still teamwork to get everybody around safely.
Yep.
It's a team sport, baby.
It's a team sport.
Yep. And even with people you're competing against.
I mean, that's,
you have to work with them. If you, if you and if you're P3 and there's P2 right in front of you and you're duking it out, P1 runs away, you know? So you mm-hmm. have to be smart about, you know, maybe just tuck in and go, you know, do a little push and go down the back straight to keep it until that last lap and then figure it out.
Yeah.
Especially with multi-class racing, because, you know,
you have to trust
one of them's faster, one of them's slower. It just happens.
And you have to trust at least everybody knows basics to get around the track. And you still have to trust them on the track that they know what they're doing.
Yep.
So it's good.
Well, sir, rumor has it we were going to talk about Spec 3. So I'm guessing we should probably talk about Spec 3. So, you know, I'm a tremendous podcast host. You know, what can I say? So how did Spec 3 start? And then how did Spec 3 really start?
Good question. So this one's interesting because in my time in Spec 3, I've had to become kind of an archaeologist, because a lot of that stuff is kind of lost in time, and I've had to piece it together. And a lot of it, I always messed with John, the National Series leader, that, you know, when he started racing Spec 3, I was in middle school. So a lot of this stuff, the context is also lost on me on how the economy was at the time and, you know, culture and all that stuff. So looking back, so we have obviously have to talk about Spec E30. So Spec E30 was started in the early 2000s. Carter Hunt's, you know, brainchild, he brought it to NASA Mid-Atlantic. They adopted it. It grew from there. It became a, you know, grassroots racing phenomenon. And it was going very well. The obvious thing that people say, and they say it to us, and they say it to Spec E46, and they'll say it to Spec E9X afterwards. They'll say, ooh, your cars are getting a little long in the tooth. Maybe it's time that we think of the new thing. And right, that's reasonable for most classes. Spec E30 has had amazing staying power, so it turned out to not be the case there. But anyway, they said, well, what's the next thing that we want to do? The idea was generally just continue the Spec E30 formula. So I think it was around 2008, 2009, 2010. Some people got together in NASA Mid-Atlantic, same region that grew Spec E30, and developed a rule set for Spec 3. Now, I've talked about this publicly previously, and this is me really spouting a bunch of hearsay because I wasn't there, so I don't know. But Spec E36, the trademark was grabbed by BMW Club before NASA started its class, almost as if they did that as soon as they saw NASA get Spec E30 as kind of the main sanctioning body for it. And I don't know the history there, but because of that, Spec 3 doesn't have that name. So they decided to call it Spec 3 instead of Spec E36. And then they started the class. The goal wasn't to be a successor. It was the goal to be a continuation. So the cars ran the same times. Spec 3s were on 15-inch wheels. They were kind of heavy. You know, it was all designed to just be the same as Spec E30, same ethos, same price point and all that stuff. And it might have done well, except for the economy was historically bad, right? 2008, 2009, nobody was building new cars. Nobody was going to the track. It was rough. So the class floundered, especially when you looked at the results and you'd see that the top three Spec E30s ran faster than the top Spec 3s. So it didn't do too well. Spec E30 continued to grow as it should, and I hope it continues to do now because it's an amazing class. And they're really fun to drive, and they're a beautiful greenhouse to be in, amazing visibility. But the class just maintained steady state. Mid-Atlantic would average, you know, 10 cars for a decade, every season, every event. We saw a couple pop up in the Southeast, saw a couple actually race out in Southern California. And, you know, that was the status quo until I joined the class in 2019. Well, started to do my build in 2019. So then we started to talk about the rebirth of the class. And I do think, you know, I've played a bit of a part in it. I won't claim full credit for the growth it's had because there were some really great rule changes that came in the preceding years of our relaunch, as we'll call it. So the original package was, you know, kind of soft spring. I think it was the Coney Yellows. The weight was like 2,900 or 2,850, something like that. 15-inch wheels, stock 325i bumpers and things like that. But then they ended up dropping the weight before I joined the class. They, what was the other big thing that they did? We got stiffer springs, and that really livened up the car. And then my first season, they allowed 17-inch wheels and M3 bumpers. And that really springboarded the class as far as performance. So we went from being, you know, 1 to 2 seconds faster than a Spec E30 at VIR to now 3 to 4 to 5. I think we had a new unofficial record set at VIR. It was a 2:10.1 or something like that, which is stupid fast. I mean, it's only a couple seconds off of Spec E46. And so the class was, you know, much more attractive with the wheels and the bumpers, and turning way better times with the new 17-inch wheels, with the new 235/40/17 Toyo RRs. And then combine that with me asking John, can I do social media marketing for the class? And originally he said, sure, but don't let it be a flash in the pan. Make sure you at least do 1 to 2 posts a week. And at first I thought, that's crazy. I can't do that. But I think I'm looking it up now. I started doing the social media a year and a half ago, and I've made 700 posts on Instagram alone. So that's almost a post a day.
Got and, to a week covered for sure.
Yeah. And it's been wildly successful. So I don't know if you want me to continue on into the success we've had with the relaunch.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Yeah. Don't worry.
So I'll leave it at that, right? We started in 2008, 2009. It was pretty average. It was a great regional class, but only really existed Mid-Atlantic. And then changed some rules in 2017, 2018, 2019, going into 2020. And then with the marketing stuff, we've had a big rebirth and a relaunch. And certainly, if you want, I should give an overview of what Spec 3 is for people that aren't listening. Yep.
We're going to get there. Okay. So what regions are currently racing Spec 3 now?
So we'll dial it back to, like, let's say 2 months ago. So 2 months ago, which would have been November, we had Northeast, Southeast, and Mid-Atlantic running events. So average field size of, I'd say, 6 to 7 across all three. Mid-Atlantic having the most, you know, around 10. Mm-hmm. I guess we didn't technically have a Florida one. Great Lakes technically does have a field because Pit Race has, right. Yeah, we had several, especially with Nationals. But those are people with completed builds with racing licenses running Spec 3 races, which are outnumbered 3 to 1 by people building.
Right. How did Nationals go? This was the first one, I think, right?
So NASA National does not agree with the assessment that this is Spec 3's first national championship. But it's the first championship that Spec 3 has been in that truly was a national. So we had fields at 2 or 3 of the Eastern state championships. I know we had people at Watkins Glen, people at VIR, people at Road Atlanta. So at least 3 of them. But this year at Pit Race, we had the biggest field yet. I think originally signed up, we had 11, maybe 12. And then there was some attrition. We lost a couple people on the first day from mechanicals. And then my personal story is horrible, where Pit Race, I've improved over second every time I've ever raced there. I live close to Pit Race, but I don't race there often because I only run with NASA. And just that weekend, I dropped 3 seconds. I was hoping to fight for a podium. The person that finished second and third, I had great battles with. During the warm-ups and the qualifying. And then on the starting lap of the championship race, there was a whole debacle, which we don't need to talk about with another class, but it led to us doing a lot more pace laps. And then when we did our standing start, my shifter, a $7 part came out of it, came loose. And awesome. Yeah, so I sat there on the starting line while I watched my dreams drive away. Everybody ran around me. And then I limped off the track and sat there behind a wall watching the race go for 40 minutes. And I finished last. So that was mine. Other than that, it was great for everybody else.
Hey, you got a good view though, right?
It was the best view you could ever imagine. Sitting behind pit exit wall right there in turn 1 at Pit Race is a really cool spot to watch the race.
Wow, that sounds awesome. So what cars are eligible?
Yeah, so another good question. It's like a 3-parter. So the ideal car is a 93 through 95, 325. Those are like the ones where you don't have to touch anything. You just get it, throw the parts on, race. But we allow all 92 through 99 E36 sedan and coupe chassis because they're all the same. If you get an M3 from 1999 or 318, which I actually don't know if they made those in 92, but just as an example, it's the same chassis, the same sheet metal. And right. You just bolt everything onto it. So we have somebody building an M3 right now. It's like a 98 shell. They're just swapping stuff over from a wrecked Spec 3. Mm-hmm. But the ethos is E36, we put some of the M3 parts on because they bolt on, and then the 325i drivetrain. So the M50, the 2.5 liter with the Getrag 250. And then you're required to run the 315 differential. And the cool thing is that's like the most popular limited slip diff that came from the factory in the non-M cars. So they're really easy to find, like $300.
Is there anything else that's required for it?
Yeah.
Is that pretty much the basics? I mean, just the big overalls.
Yeah, the big overalls would be kind of the same as any of the other spec BMW classes. So a spec suspension. So we run a Koni yellow shock with a Swift spring that's made specifically for Spec 3. We run a spec Vorschlag camber plate. So you can't use any off the shelf. It has to be that one, but they keep them in stock. We have a spec tune. Demo World carries a spec 3 tune chip with a decoder board. You buy it. It's like $150. You plop it in. That's your DME. So no tuning required or anything like that.
We have a
spec exhaust. And I'm doing a lot of gesticulating with my hands.
Right. You're a hand talker.
So I'm doing air quotes saying spec exhaust. There's a spec specification for it. Most people buy them from this one person that makes them for stupid cheap, like $400 for the entire exhaust. Wow. We require the 315 LSD, and those are $300. We require M3 front control arms from 96 through 99 because they're safer, replaceable ball joints, better geometry. We have two spec any roll bars that you can run. And besides that, there's really nothing else that you have to do. It's just a bunch of other stuff you can't do, right? Replace your bushings, do some chassis reinforcement, put your safety gear in a roll cage, and then go.
Okay. You said earlier you could run the M3 bumpers. Does that mean you can run the M3 quarters too, or no?
So there's nothing different body-wise between an M3 and a non-M for the body. So yes. So you can run, like I have an M3 trunk on my car. It's the same thing. You can run M3 front fenders. The quarter panels, as far as I know, aren't any different either. They're the same exact between on-Ms and Ms. Okay. That's why the E36 is so wonderful. It's the same thing everywhere, right? It's not this unobtainium M3. And then because the M3 is unobtainium, everybody buys up the 325. It's like we were like the third rung on the ladder. People want the 328 if they can't afford the M3, but the M3 itself is still a $10,000 to $15,000 car. And then they all share the same parts.
Right. Yeah, we had one until we didn't at Charlotte Roval, but that's just...
Turned it into
a taco. But so is there kind of any optional things? I know it's a spec series, but is there kind of like you could do this, but you don't have to do this kind of
stuff? Yeah, some things that are optional that we don't ever see people really do because it's not worth it is we have a very iconic headlight duct. Mm-hmm. So if you've been on the track and you've seen an E36 with a fiberglass intake duct, mm-hmm. that's the spec 3 part. It's become fairly ubiquitous. And now we worked with Race German to create an ABS plastic version of it. That's optional, but it's kind of an iconic spec 3 look. And we don't have the internal data, but we assume it gives you a horsepower or two.
Got to.
A diff. So, you know, there's three levels you could do. You can run an open diff. Again, there's no reason to. They're $300. You can run a factory unrebuilt one. Mm-hmm. I have for 4 years now. Or you could spend, you know, $1,000 and get it rebuilt and then never worry about it again. But that's kind of the baller option. Besides that, can't really think of anything that's optional.
So somebody's sitting at home with a 328 convertible?
So we don't allow convertibles.
Okay.
And you can't run, you can run a 328 body, but you have to swap in the drivetrain from a 325. So
yeah.
The big thing right now is, so our Southeast group is huge. They're a huge, excited group of 20 or 30 cars being built. There's a lot of energy. And the thing that they have focused their energy on, much to my chagrin, is the idea of a Spec 3 wagon. So, so technically, in the rules, we don't at this time say, you know, that it can't be a wagon. The intent of the rules is that it shouldn't be a wagon because they weren't legal to have in the U.S. You couldn't even, you know, get them until recently. So maybe someone will sneak a wagon in. And if they do,
they're like, well, it doesn't say there's not a wagon in the.
Yeah. And it's all the same stuff, right? Everything bolts up. Everything will fit. So, you know, more power to them if they want to try to squeeze it in before that.
You can fit more.
Your loophole's closing, guys. Your loophole's closing.
Yeah. It's like every sci-fi movie where the wormhole is closing.
Yeah.
trying to get the ship through it before.
Yeah. That's right.
That's the inspectory wagon.
So compared to other series, can you give us an example of the relative speed versus the other series people might be familiar with?
Yeah. So in Lightning, you know, we can just talk through. So the way that NASA road racing splits up their groups is usually in two groups, Lightning and Thunder. So Lightning is all of the reasonable vehicles and Thunder are the more high horsepower,
right.
Much larger Delta. So Lightning's easy to kind of compare. So we're faster than a spec Miata, which doesn't mean anything, right? Speed has no indication of quality of racing. We're faster than a spec E30. We are slower than a spec E46. And we are kind of in the middle of Honda Challenge cars. So H2 cars, depending on the track, a spec 3 may be faster. Or if it's a longer track, more high horsepower, then Honda Challenge might be faster. So if you look at like Summit Point, for example, it's pretty close between the front runners. You know, looking at DIR, actually in October, Spec 3, you know, ran the same speed as an H1 car, which was pretty exciting. As far as probably some other comparisons, so if you're familiar with NASA and GTS2 car, you'll see E36s, and sometimes you'll see a non-M. You can usually expect us to be, you know, at VIR 4 to 5 seconds, maybe a little bit more slower than the GTS2 car, because ours could technically be GTS1. And our cars also fall into ST5. So if you know anyone that races ST5, the front runners of that class will be a couple seconds ahead of a fast spec 3, except for, I think, kind of embarrassingly, at Daytona NASA Championships a couple years ago, the podium for ST5 was going to be a spec E9X build that was kind of an ST5 trim, a spec E46, and then a spec 3 was in third place until the last lap and he blew up his clutch. So that kind of says that speed range right there.
Right. So the class seems to be fairly competitive, and I know they made a ton of these cars. But with that, especially if you're trying to do a spec series, especially as you're transitioning and growing and going, you know, national seemingly, any rule arguments, points of dissension, clarification, you can call it whatever word you want to end up with, but everybody tries to build a better widget, right?
Yep. So our rules have been the most active I can imagine they've ever been in the last 2 years, because imagine you've got a class of 10 people racing in the same region. They're all buddies and it's that way forever. What's kind of given as what's okay, what's not okay is understood. Extrapolate that out to now 60 to 70 people building cars actively across the entire United States. And people start asking questions and people have different cage builders and people have different ways of sourcing parts. There's been a lot of rules that have come up that have needed to be clarified. So a good example is in the most two recent rule updates, we had to make sure that we made it legal to delete traction control. So every car that had been built up to that point was a pre-95, didn't have, you know, the traction control, the ASC plus T. I think it actually was just ASC on these cars. So we had to add a rule. Yeah, you can delete that. Something else is things like trunk spoilers. We had a question for that come up recently. And the way that our rules are built, you don't ever have to say, you cannot do this. You say, you can do that. And then if it doesn't say you can do that, then you can't do it. But then you run into loopholes where somebody says, well, actually, from the factory, my car did come with this wing or this spoiler, and it just so happened to be a one-off by BMW or something, right? So then we'll have to, you know, clarify things like that. Other than that, I think there hasn't been anything that really needed to be shut down. We had discussions about chassis mount shifters. So those who know how interesting that conversation was. It kind of goes against our ethos because we want to have affordable cars, and looking at videos of us racing our affordable race cars with a $800 shifter in the middle kind of didn't make any sense. But the masses spoke.
It's like a cheeseburger and a Diet Coke, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? But in this example, it's like a triple-decker cheeseburger. And also, you know, there are some anecdotal stories or people saying that those chassis mount shifters weird the transmissions earlier. And that's a concern for us, is that there's fewer and fewer transmission rebuilders out there. So these transmissions are $300, and I have like five of them because I just buy them when I see them. But, you know, anything we could do to stop people from killing them every event. And then thus, you know, if you can run a part that makes you faster and you can afford to replace the parts that it breaks, you know, that gives you an advantage. But after a lot of discussion, it kind of seemed to come out in the wash that it really wasn't a big deal. Maybe somebody gains, that, you know, a thousandth of a second on their shifts because of a chassis mount. So that was dropped. But that's probably the most interesting rules related thing. Other than that, it's all fairly unanimous clarifications that everybody agrees on, saying, you know, don't delete your washer nozzles because that's an aero thing and some cars can do it, some cars can't. Clarifying other stuff, like you can delete your power steering if you choose, right? Not that it's a good idea.
So on the Spec Race 3 cars, what's the rough estimate of the cost of cars at this point?
Yeah, so
really, or the car build versus, you know, buying.
Yeah, so it really depends on where you're at, on what it's going to cost to build, just based off of paying someone to do a cage and to find a donor. So on the East Coast, these cars are just a dime a dozen. I mean, they are the cheapest BMW to buy. Somebody just picked up a car 2 days ago, complete 325i manual, good condition, for $1,000. Wow. And they'll build it into a car successfully. Our parts list, complete. And this is including like you buying your suit and your helmet and your wheels and your tires and all that, is about $10,000. And that also includes putting the cage in the car. So
right.
I built mine for under 15. It's like right under 15. And that included everything. If you want to build a top of the line car, like top of the line, 25, and that includes the donor. And then anything else in between. So a car that's at the very front of the pack that has a digital dash, has completely all brand new everything, brand new control arms, a nice fancy race tech seat, an AIM camera system, like all the bells and whistles, probably 25. A car that still is using stock dash, stock shifter, stuff like that, easily 15 or less, and then anywhere in between. The chassis prices are the interesting thing. This, you can get them all day for $1,000. Especially if you're good and looking for them. We see that some of our people in California are struggling because they don't want to spend more than, you know, $4,000 to $5,000 on a running example, which is reasonable, right? You want to get it cheaper than that, but you have to pay around $4,000 to $5,000 in California usually to find a good condition running 325i, and that moves the price point up.
What California considers a good condition car and what the Northeast considers a good condition car.
I'm struggling with that one. Yeah, because I see some really baddy stuff and people over here are like, ooh, baby, that's what I want. Exactly. In California, it's like, oh, the clear coat's a little peeled. That's not good. Right.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like a pretty race car, though? I'm fine with that.
For sure.
So consumables, they're going to obviously run you. Somewhat.
So
for a race.
When is this gonna air?
When do you want it to air? Your podcast.
Okay. So
things that go whir.
So I'm gonna say something right now that is very exciting news. And I'm not allowed to say until it's formally announced, although some people do know. So first off, our consumables are insanely cheap. So the big thing is our brake pads are free. You buy them once, you never pay for them again. FCP Euro carries our brake pads. I've warrantied them 20 times already. And we've even spoken to FCP. They have a very keen interest in our class and they're totally cool with it. Also, a certain man named Jay Andrew sells our brake pads extremely cheap as well. They're spec 3 stamped on the back. So anyway, that's not the exciting thing I was going to talk about. So the big consumable, if it's not brake pads, and oil for us is tires, right? So new for 2024 is we've had our Toyo Buck payout more than doubled for every finish. So we are now in the top tier of the NASA payouts along with Speccy 46 and Honda Challenge 1. So things are going to get a lot easier for a lot of people. It was already pretty good. Our cars are historically very good on tires. It's nothing like endurance racing where you get, you know, two 24-hour races or whatever out of a set of, you know, street tires. You can usually get competitively, like run in the front of the pack, 15 heat cycles out of a tire, still usable before you chuck it as a practice tire, 20 to 25. The 15s were a lot better. I used to take those up to 40 or more heat cycles. But now you don't even really need to worry about that because our payouts are doubled. The number of people that get paid out are increased. So it's very exciting. So very excited to talk about that.
What about wet tires?
So our reins, that's a very interesting one. We are the only class that I'm aware of that has a different size wheel for their reins. And we do that for a couple of reasons. So for a rain tire, having a lot of sidewall is good, right? It generates a lot more heat. So in theory, you get the tires hotter running the 225, 50, 15 Toyo RA1 than you would running the 17s. But also, they're much, much cheaper. And also, the 15-inch wheel, while it's pretty ugly, is basically free. So we use the wheels off of the E34 5 Series as our rain wheels. At least you can, right? You can also go buy a 15x7 wheel if you want. But the E34 wheel is $20 a wheel in great condition. And very abundant. You just buy them on eBay. People are usually throwing them away. So that's what we run for the reins. And I don't even know what those cost. You buy a set of reins once every 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've got a few different cars. I mean, models, model types, and you know, BMW usually does an upgrade somewhere in between the series.
Yeah. Life cycle and pulse.
Yeah, exactly. So are there any pluses or minuses, like for the different vehicles, if somebody's looking to, you know, I am alpha and I will win?
Yeah, so that's kind of baked into our rules where there really isn't anything that gives you an advantage. We are very, very conscious of that. So I get asked all the time why we don't allow the 328 or why we don't allow the 323, which is the 2.5 liter after 96. And we don't do that just because we don't want that. We don't want someone to figure out the 328 is better at this track, the 325 is better at this track, and I'll swap them or I'll have two cars or whatever. Not that I think it would come to that, but with our rate of growth, we will eventually have that. You know, when you have a 40-car field, somebody's in it to win it. So we want to avoid that. And then going back to the chassis being different, or the same, I mean, all of them are exactly the same. So there's really no advantage to getting a 99 M3 chassis as opposed to a 93 318 chassis. It's the same exact thing. There's no advantage there. There is coupe versus sedan. They are slightly different. This is one I'm very pedantic about. So the E30, the E21, and the 2002 before it were all sedans. Even the two doors, they're two-door sedans. I will fight you to the death over it. The E36 is the first 3 Series that has a distinction. The coupes and sedans are different. The coupes have a lower rake of the windshield. They have longer front fenders, different trunk profile. So in theory, there is some aero differences there, maybe. And of course, different body panels. Sedans tend to run a little heavier, but we're talking like 10 pounds. And sedans are easy to work on. So that's one thing. Body panels seem to be a little bit easier to get for them as well. But yeah, I mean, besides that, there's really no differences I can think of. Actually, I will say one. So obviously you want to get a 93 through 95 for the ease of build. But if you get a 95, you get some bonuses. So I have a 95 and I like it because the fuel filter is moved under the car, for example. And some of the later cars, as opposed to being on the firewall, some of the later cars come with, was it 4-channel ABS as opposed to 3-channel ABS, which in theory is better, but we don't have any data really to prove that it is. And the cars that are running at the front are actually the 3-channel cars. So I don't think there's any material difference yet on those.
Interesting.
So what about the weak spots on these cars, either mechanically or performance areas? You know,
yeah. So the marketing side of me is going to tell you there aren't any, but, and a lot of BMW people will tell you that as well. there aren't any that are horrifically bad Achilles heels, but also that's because it has to be the second most raced chassis in all of club racing in the last 30 years.
Right.
So you go to the track, you see a Miata or you see an E36 BMW. So everything's been figured out. The market is huge for the ways to fix them, and they're all well documented. So things that you should do to your E36 track car or Spec 3 before you go out on track are:
Captain's Log Supplemental.
So, Bill, guess what?
What?
We did the Sentinel. We did the Sentinel.
We did. How did you like it?
You know what? We were talking about the Sentinel.
We have.
It was great. We understood watching how the Sentinel works. Mm-hmm. But we finally got it into our car. And I got to tell you, that was really awesome. I was able to see every one of my mistakes.
We have hours of them.
We have hours of my mistakes. Okay. But we have hours of good stuff, too, which is awesome. It actually showed us the speed that shows where we were on track.
We were streaming it.
We were streaming it live.
Boring billions of people across the world.
But it was pretty incredible. Plus, on it, you're able to put your insignia, your logos on your app also. And the clarity was amazing. It was really easy to put in. Easier than I thought it was.
I know. You kept making a big deal out of it. I'm like, it's really not that hard.
Actually, until
we focused on it. It wasn't too bad. And then we got some help. No. It was pretty
easy. Yeah, it was. It was pretty good.
You know what? I like the stream because some of the tracks we go to don't have great cell phone coverage, but it's got a USB stick backup. So I just uploaded the high quality video without the cellular interruption. So if you watched us earlier and said, wow, they got from there to there really quickly, you can watch the real video and see that. No, we didn't. It's just a cell phone went out.
But yeah. So the learning curve for me, obviously, I'm slightly techno-Amish.
Slightly.
When it comes to the wiring and stuff like that. But we get it in, and I love it. We were able to sit there right at the track and watch what we were doing in the car. And that was amazing.
Which was good, because if you have a problem with your radio, you can tell, you know, if something is going on that you need to know about. Like a couple times we've had cars come in and we didn't know they were broken. I know it's hard to imagine one of our cars being broken, but, you know, whatever. But you can watch the video. And even with the cell phone coverage we had at that particular event, it was like a 30-second delay. So it wasn't bad. Uh-huh. And you can compare multiple drivers because you have each of the stints are broken up. So we got to work on not only our driving, but if we wanted to, we could work on our pit stops and see exactly what we do. And there's some things that we need to talk about as a team. And it was pretty good. You know, like I said, it takes me, once we got the wiring hooked up for the power, I probably could go from an empty shell to a full up setup running Sentinel. I could probably do that in like 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you could literally install it in a car before a race. It's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we got to see the driver and the front windshield. And if we want to, we can have three. We can see backwards, or one of the guys we're going to work with at the upcoming event, he said, could you put a camera on the driver's eyes so we could see what they're looking at? Mm-hmm. I said, why, yes, I can. I haven't done it yet, but I'll figure it out. We've got time.
Well, I love it.
All right. Very well. That sounds like I can buy another one then. Woo!
Before you go out on track, are obviously replace the bushings. There's a ton of bushings on these cars. If they're all worn out, you're going to have really wonky tire wear and handling characteristics, and it's annoying. Reinforce the chassis. That doesn't matter until you get to sticky tires and really strong forces within the car. But there are issues that crop up from where the subframe mounts to the floor in the back. It's a much bigger deal on E46 330s. Like almost every 330 you're going to buy is going to have hairline cracks back there. It's very rare. I've seen examples of one or two E36s that have had that going on back there, but it's better safe than sorry. So just go ahead and weld those in. The trailing arm pockets, it's the same thing. Totally fine for a street car. That's not a big deal at all. But if you're out there racing for many years and the trailing arms, they feel a lot of forces, and those will start to crack on the chassis. So there's a plate that you weld in there. The shock towers, that's another thing for E36s, especially if they get rusty and you have a really strong spring on there, it'll blow out the shock towers. So BMW for now 20 years has sold a plate that you buy and you just put it in there and sandwich it, and that solves that problem. And then the cooling system is the other big thing. And again, these are not things that are just going to like sneak up and bite you unsurprised and kill you. It's just kind of the standard, do this before you try to run a full season on the track. But the cooling system. So it's a long six cylinder. It's very, very long with an aluminum head. Luckily, it's an iron block, but you don't want to overheat it. They're not very friendly to going over, 280. The head will warp and you're in for trouble. So water pump, we almost all run Stewart. The metal impeller water pumps run either a Z3 radiator or a stock radiator if it's new, or an aluminum one. And that's just about it. And oh,
The
one last
plastic
thing.
bits.
Yeah, get rid of all the plastic bits. The later cars come with a plastic timing chain guide. That's something to replace while you're in there. But the other big one is the oil pump nut. So this is like the infamous thing. Everybody knows about the E36, the M50, M52, M54, and the S50, S52s. Is the oil pump nut is reverse threaded, and if you spin your car on track and the motor turns backwards, or if your chain has a lot of slack on it, and that slack on the chain can kind of act like a ratchet and undo that nut. So it's a $3 part from Dimmerworld. You put that nut on there, safety wire it, call it a day.
It's the IMS bearing, right?
Yeah, it's the IMS bearing of the BMW. Yes.
Yes,
It's a lot
exactly.
less tricky to solve.
For sure.
So, I know Bill has his techniques, but why don't you tell our audience how to find a good car to race or a good donor car?
So the big thing is make friends. The thing that always throws me for a loop is when I see people struggling silently. If you go to the Spec 3 discussion group on Facebook, I'm happy to say that we're up to almost 2,000 members, up from
Wow.
300 2 years ago. and then our group chats, we have collective hundreds of people across all the US and all the various region group chats. So the Southeast group chat, for example, there's a good donor posted there 3 times a day, and that's not even a joke. There are so many donors posted in that Southeast group chat for less than 3 grand that, like, we don't even know what to do with them. Everybody's got their cars. It's just a rotating, slide deck of cheap cars to get. So I just say, reach out. If you post on the Spec 3 group and say, "Hey guys, I'm in Colorado. I'm looking to get into Spec 3. I want to buy a donor." You're going to have 10 comments immediately with things that people know of. BMW people are hoarders. I know several people that just have donors sitting in their backyard.
I feel targeted here.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've had a bunch of them, and I had to pare it down when I moved to Pittsburgh, but I used to have like just multiple cars worth of parts sitting in my little townhouse. So, but anyway, you just ask. That's the big thing. Just ask. Now, what I don't suggest is if you're not going to run Spec 3 and you come to our Spec 3 group and ask, like, we're pretty good at figuring out who's for real and who's for, not. So like, don't use us to find cheap E36s, but if you're the real deal, we'll find you something. And it's like crowdsourcing, times a thousand. So that's the number one advice. If you do choose to run it alone, just join every Facebook group. I mean, it's a lot of work. I'm in every Facebook group for E36s, BMWs for sale and all that. And it's just too many donors really to filter out. So I'll post them from time to time, doing that. And then of course, spreading it out. Facebook Marketplace is the go-to now. Sometimes people see them on OfferUp, and very rarely Craigslist these days. Those are the two big ones, the three big ones.
Right. Well, sir, we have taken up a ton of your time, and thank you for coming on talking about Spec 3. We're going to have you back on again to badger you about other topics and perhaps even do
Course.
some of our Fast and Furious story time questions, which are stupid but fun.
Yeah, sounds excellent.
So if we've convinced anyone that, Spec 3 could be the thing for them, best ways to contact you or follow the group or.
Yeah, so at NASA Spec 3 on Instagram, same thing on Facebook. Those are our media pages. If you want to join the discussion directly on Facebook, there is the NASA Spec 3 discussion group to join, and you can ask questions there. If you're just looking for general guidance, spec3.org, and you'll find a link tree that has a lot of things, including an almost 80-page manifesto that I've written on what to find, like what kind of donor to buy, how to build it, how to progress, driving techniques, car setup. It's called the Spec 3 Constructor's Guide. There's only one other class that has it. That's Spec Miata, and that's a company that made it. They charge you money for it. Mm-hmm. Ours is free, and it's always growing. And spec3.org also has the parts list and a link to the forum, which nobody uses anymore. But those are the best ways to get in contact with us.
Awesome. Well, sir, we will definitely see you at the Northeast events and perhaps even the Great Lakes events.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having me on.
This was really fun.
We may hit Hyperfest this year for the first time, so that we're looking forward to that.
Please do. I'll be there in registration in the paddock. So come say hi.
The only reason it's a maybe is that's the week after One Lap of America finishes, so I'm not sure if I'm going to be conscious. But
yeah, running on no sleep there.
We're going to try. We're going to give it a run. And thank you for coming on, and we look forward to seeing you back out on the track.
Thanks for having me.